Hi, my name is Lee Maxey, and welcome to another episode of Mind Maxing Podcast. And today, I'm delighted to be here with a friend of mine, Kevin Ross, who's the president of Lynn University in Boca Raton, Florida. And I'm delighted to have Kevin here. Lynn's had some terrific successes in his presidency, and is doing some really neat things. And this is on the tail of a neat article talking about some of Lynn's alternative approaches to admissions, which I think have been really successful. Today's conversation is about adolescence to adulthood. You know, what kinds of things higher ed is doing to help students or people find their way to adulthood, which is not as easy as it may have been in the past, with so many different options and so many different choices and so many different paths. So welcome, Kevin. Glad you could be here. So
thanks, Lee. Great to see you.
Yeah. Start off with our first question, which is, you know, what's working in helping adults achieve adulthood as they find their way from adolescence or young adulthood to adulthood?
I'm not sure if this is a new innovation or just something that's tried and true, but we believe that requiring certain things of students actually is working. There's certain elements of a Lynn education that every student is required to do. And it requires a lot of practice, trying things over and over, maybe not being so good at things the first time you do them, and learning over time and getting lots of in the feedback in real time. We require our students in every class to read quite a bit, to write a lot, to present a lot as well, and to collaborate. So it's not just in that one public speaking class that you get finished with and you're thrilled that it's over with because you're scared to death of that. And I shared this with our students at convocation just the other day, and I could see their eyes getting very wide. I was, but you know, come after our first block and we're on a block schedule, that's just how they do it. And this is a wonderful, place, a very safe place to practice those types of skills. And, you know, students can see the building blocks, and the progress that they've made in real time, particularly because of what was for us a COVID innovation with a block schedule, which is really like learning through project management. So it's not something that's esoteric and out there and so far away that we just talk about it in a theoretical way to them. It's more something that's very tactile that they can understand and feel. So we think that has a lot to do with persistence.
Can you talk a little bit more about how you create that safe place to explore and do those things that maybe, you know, writing's not easy for everybody, or public speaking is a common one that's not easy for some people.
Breaking it down into the sum of its parts, you know, not starting with that 20 to 50 page paper is a good way to start. Really having students understand who they are. We use the Gallup tool StrengthsFinder in the first few days of students being here, so they understand, you know, great, everyone's got deficiencies, but these are things that you're actually good at and passionate about. So let's explore those. Let's take that more positive track. And we find that that does engage students much more. Really, I think this path that students are on, if you break down their entire college experience to their major, to their classes, to actually what you're doing in those classes, with, you know, rubrics and learning outcomes that we all have. But, you know, what we like to do is have that end user perspective in mind. And a lot of other corporations and organizations have done that with great success. Mm-hmm. We've studied them. So really trying to meet students where they are and where we know they need to go. And breaking that down at the course level has been really a critical thing for us. And studying that data and then refining it over and over and over again. So there's no silver bullet by any means, but we've been at these things for long enough where with a consistent group of leadership here, so that we feel that we can actually move the ball on that a little bit and make some of those changes and study and see if it made a change. And it was a positive one.
So an earlier podcast we did with Anthony Carnevale from Georgetown talked about, you know, he just described that in 1983, the age for adult financial independence was 25. And in 2019, it was 32. It's probably older than that now. So people aren't getting to that adult financial independence. And I'm sure in my mind that went right to how do I budget for the 20 something kids that I have right now, who apparently are unlikely to be financially independent until they're a little older than I had hoped. People are not moving into that adult financial independence, or maybe even what I'd call adulthood, in necessarily the same same rate or as quickly as they did in earlier times. What are some of the barriers that you see as adolescents are moving to that adulthood, especially related to education?
So I think one of the challenges is that, and I shared this with students and parents this week as everyone moved in, is there's not another time in your life, as opposed to college, there's not another time in your life other than college when you'll have this many people focusing on your success and this many offices and services to do whatever you want to do and be successful at it. That does not happen later on when you work for a corporation necessarily. You may have benefits and things like that, but it's not going to be what it is while you're here. Unfortunately, I think there is it's not fully understood or perceived by students of what all those goods and services are. And there's probably a program for everything at every college for students that what they want to do or what they really need to do. And that goes back to the requirements I mentioned before of a curriculum. A curriculum shouldn't be a bird walk necessarily. It shouldn't be choose a number of courses that meet certain criteria with the distribution method. It should actually be purposeful. It should have intention to it. And part of the moving to adulthood, hopefully in some ways, we could tackle that through a curriculum. We try to do that here. And I think we're pretty successful at it. We don't have it all figured out by any means. But there's certain essential skills that students need to have. And that comes out of things that are doing outside the classroom, but it must come from things they're doing within the classroom as well. Some of the challenges we see here are not unlike anyone else. Mental health challenges are significant, particularly in whatever component. I don't think we're quite post-pandemic, wherever we are right now, just in a new world. That was a challenge even before the world was shaken, all of us together. And you know, I think that having a place, as I mentioned before, for students to test and to try, adulting is a comment that or a term that was made a number of years ago, kind of as a joke. But they need to. They need safe spaces to, and I mean safe spaces where they can try things and fail and understand and learn from whatever that shortcoming or failure might be. So those are the things that I'm seeing, and I think our colleagues here on campus would say the same. There is a strong desire to be an adult, but there's also a strong desire for people to be the CEO, and you have to get there by doing a number of things first. And some of that is learning things the hard way, and then regrouping and being resilient.
So, looking forward and thinking of in a broader sense, what are some structural or impediments that exist that could change or you could see changing in the near future? As you said, we are maybe post-pandemic, endemic, whatever it is, just had COVID personally a week and a half or so ago. So it's not over. We're definitely, seeing a lot of reverberations from the disruption that we've had over the last several years. So, what are some things you see changing to make it more possible for people to grow into their, successful adult lives?
So I actually had COVID a few weeks ago as well. Everyone I know has gotten it again. So as you said, we are living with this, and we figured a lot more out. But I guess that's the hopeful nature that we have here is when things were taken away from us, when our campus environments were taken away from us, the value of campus community was far more evident than I think it ever had been. Mm-hmm. And we all read the news too, and we hear the college isn't worth it, and it's too expensive, and it's not, you can go do other things, or you're just gonna have the same outcomes. And I don't personally believe, I work in colleges and dedicated my life to higher education and the potential of young adults. I believe that we really saw how valuable college was. So as our campus community and many others around the country and the world have raced back to each other, there's been, I think, a renewed sense of optimism of the impact that we have at colleges, particularly small independent colleges like us, because people, they're waiting in line now to get the things they used to complain about because they weren't bad in the first place. And I think it's really been an interesting shift in some ways with our campus community has always been a very tight one. It's a very diverse one. Lots of different views and races and creeds and cultures, and that's by design. We have a portfolio approach that we use here at Lynn. And people really missed that when we had to go remote for a short period of time. So I'm very hopeful. I think that as wherever we are, there's some knowability and a little more certainty than there was, in March of 2020. And hopefully that optimism continues and we all continue to take advantage of the resources that we have on our campuses for our students. And I know that our faculty and staff miss them dearly and wanted them back. And it's been really exciting to see that in action when it's happened.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that's really, I think, special about Lynn is for your size, how many international students you have as part of your overall population, and not international from one country, but from a variety of countries and different areas of the world. Can you comment on how you see things differently for people from other cultures, people from other countries in relationship to their path to adulthood, because they are coming to your institution and I'll say mixing with, you know, people who are coming straight from Florida or straight from other parts of the United States. So what are your observations there?
So Lynn really is a mini United Nations in a lot of ways. And I can't take credit for that. It's something that started in our very earliest days in 1962 when we were Marymount College. They were part of a Marymount system, Catholic women's schools all over the world. And so that was one of the special elements that we've continued here at Lynn for, this is our 60th anniversary. So, you know, over a half a century, and it's really a remarkable environment. As you point out, we don't have all of our students from one country. It is a portfolio. It moves and shapes, it moves and changes over time. And that shapes what our campus community feels like. I recall when Venezuela was one of our top countries for recruiting students. And then when things imploded there, and same with Saudi and places like that. So, you know, we kind of watch what's going on around the world and we feel it. We're kind of a bellwether in some ways for what's happening economically, but also socially around the world. And so there's always that change and churn. I was talking to a consultant the other day, and they wanted to come and do a seminar on change management at Lynn University. I said, that's called Tuesday around here. So it's a place that's we're very comfortable with that, and we like that. But what that does for us here and for our student body, about, you know, a little over 30% of our students are from the state of Florida, which one might argue they were from somewhere else 5 years before that, because everybody moved to Florida in the last 5 years. And, you know, about 45 states, and then 18% of the student body is international from about 110 countries. So you really can't pigeonhole and say, okay, well, that's the school where the kids from X go. And it surprises a lot of people. But what that means is that we believe there's great strengths in our differences, mm-hmm. and we celebrate that. And that's embedded again into the coursework, the dialogues, the core curriculum we have. So students are taking classes. It's not just enough to be around lots of international students and students from somewhere else who may think differently than you. And we can't even say that, oh, those are our international students, because that's a wide and diverse body as well. Mm-hmm. So in the classroom, they really do wrestle with topics of difference and different perspectives every day. And that's just the dialogues mm-hmm. of self and society and belief and reason and justice and civic life. So the domestic lens is quickly shattered, and we immediately go to, well, what do you think, someone from Zimbabwe or China? And that's where we find that the greatest learning happens.
Mm-hmm. It struck me, I've thought this many times, we talk about college as being sort of like one thing. It's not. It's so many different things. And we talk about students like that's their one thing. There's so many different kinds of students. And I think that's one of the challenges, you know, societally that we have is, you know, a label doesn't necessarily capture anything much more than a little bit of an individual. So just other thoughts you have
along those lines. You know, oftentimes when we're talking to members of the media, they'll say, well, college is like this. And my retort often is like, well, the media is like this. They said, well, not my paper. And I said, okay, well, not our college. Can we start over? Because, you know, we're not an elite institution. We're not an open admission institution either. We've got, in addition to the variety of types of students we have lots of types of learners. We've had a program for students with learning differences for over 30 years, long before it was called anything or diagnostic. We just believe that students have the potential. And if we work with them in the proper way and met them where they were, we could get them to where they need to be. So you're dead right. And understanding that type of student range is I think critically important for students to be successful, because it's one size fits all hasn't worked for a long, long time.
Well, the normal schools are a thing of 100 years ago, so we aren't going to bet back to that. So what are some of your closing thoughts in terms of ideas for educators, for higher ed institutions to help with this process of helping people move to adulthood?
So part of it is stay in the course and stick it around. And we tell our students that too. First thing is show up, be there. And a lot of us at Lynn have been here for a while, and we've tried a lot of, I think we've been kind of bold and persistent experimenters, and we've try to keep that end user perspective in mind and learn from it and refine it and refine it and refine it. So there's really no sense of arrival if you're in this business, if you're in higher education, because conditions change, as you point out. Our students are a little different than they were, but there's some similarities. But one of the nice things about, I think, working at a place like Lynn, and as you pointed out, from a technology standpoint, we've been at this for a while with partners like Apple and others, is that you really do get to see the impact. It's not just a flash in the pan idea and innovation, if you will, that's going to go away in a couple of years because an administration changes or faculty decide they don't want to do it anymore. So that type of commitment, I think, to never being satisfied with our approach to student success has made students very successful, because we're always thinking about and not just because we want to change things all the time, but we're always thinking, could this be improved? What's the data telling us? And candidly, sometimes, oftentimes, because we use a design thinking lens here a lot, is what do the students think? We could cook up this amazing program and then put it in front of them and they go, not really that interested. And we need to make it connect with them in a meaningful way so that they can benefit from it.
Thank you again, Kevin. This has been a wonderful conversation. Look forward to talking with you again soon.
Thanks, Lee. Appreciate it.